Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
Welcome back to Death, a funny business.
It's not Tuesday.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
I know. My mum's dead and so is her dad.
And that's why we're here.
Yeah, fun, fun, fun. Just in the middle of the day on a Monday.
Yes.
I feel a bit discombobulated.
You do. Trigger warning. Tasha is feeling
a little discombobulated. But
it's fine.
Do you know what? It's daytime outside. Look at that. Sunny. Sun is shining. Tank is clean.
And I am actually feeling super relaxed because
good.
I did breath work this morning.
She did the breath work in preparation
for Stuart Sanderman, who is a breath work expert. And he's coming into the studio very shortly. And then we're followed by the grief counsellor, Georgina Stermer.
She's so excited.
We've got a very busy show today.
You're about to like lose your mind.
I'm about to lose my mind.
Becky's like the biggest breathwork advocate ever.
It's quite funny. I don't shut up about it. Because the thing is, I've only done like I've done one class in person.
Really?
And the rest I've done online. So,
oh, okay. You can do it online, I suppose.
Well, he's going to tell you all about this, but he's got the BreathPod app, and you can.
Yes.
So I've signed up, and you can do morning kind of like manifestation or focus sessions, and they're only 10 minutes long.
Mm.
So this morning, normally what I'll do is go on my phone and then just scroll, and it'll be an hour, and I'm still scrolling.
Oh, yes.
It's not good.
Oh, sorry. Like, you mean on, like, Instagram.
Instagram and all those other platforms are available.
My screen time thing came in this morning, and it was not impressive.
It's probably because you have a new phone.
Yeah, it's because I have a new phone, and I'm like, ooh, isn't this fun?
You lose yourself. And
you
so
do. How can it be, like, 6 hours a day?
No, it's disgusting behaviour, and we need to stop doing it. Imagine all the things I could learn in 6 hours a day. So I've decided my routine for the last 3 days have been to wake up. And actually wake up. Don't snooze my alarm.
Nice.
And then open my blinds.
Nice.
And sit in bed and do breath work.
That is
for 10 minutes.
So good.
Just to reset my brain for
Slay.
The day.
I'm so proud of you.
And this morning was picturing my success, what I want in the future.
Woo!
I could visualize it. I was there. I was happy. I was dancing.
I love it.
And then supposedly, throughout the day, you're supposed to be feeling really relaxed.
Do you feel really relaxed?
I feel good.
You seem relaxed. You seem like super cool,
I feel quite good. So maybe.
You feeling a bit better from.
It could be the antidepressants.
And they're kicking in.
I was basically in bed for 3 days last week.
Yeah.
I felt horrendous.
Yeah.
So if anyone who hasn't listened, I started taking antidepressants, 10 days ago? Yeah.
You've still got a little bit of time to go before they really are.
Yeah, no, I don't think that it's
like, you know, it's that good 2 week mark and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, the sun is shining. But breath work seems to be doing you a world of service.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something that we can maybe talk to both of our guests about, but I think it's doing breath work in conjunction with
it's 100% that, like,
you can't just do one. I think you need to be doing the therapy 100%. And everything else alongside the running. Oh, I went for a run as well.
Well done.
So I'm trying to rewire my brain and get back to feeling good.
Mm.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I think I'm just a bit like discombobulated today. I am, for the listeners who love tracking my cycle, I am due my period, so you can mark it in your calendars, guys. It's very exciting. But like, I literally, like, yesterday got home from work and was just anxious. We had a bit of like a stressful day at work, and then there was like, there's definitely a mouse in my house because I found some poop, and I was like, ah, damn it, I'm gonna have to deal with that. And then, you know, and you're just like, oh God, and then you have to go to bed. And it's like, ah, now I have to go to bed slightly anxious. So then I did some stretching last night, actually.
Okay.
I'm proud of myself. I did some stretching and I breathed, you know, stretched my body.
Done breath work.
And then I went to, and then I had a really big everything shower. You know, when you just like have one of those, like wash your hair and scrub your body with like nice salts. And then I felt a bit better. And then, yeah, just been a bit of a hectic morning. But such is life. How was Bridget Jones?
Bridget Jones was really good. I really want to talk about this with you when you've watched it.
I know, I'm so mad. I was going to go and see it. And I literally thought to myself, go and see it this morning. And then Well, thank God I didn't, but...
I would have been on my own head, guys.
Did you laugh? Did you cry?
I didn't cry, actually.
Oh.
No, it's a lie. I did cry.
You had a little bit of a
tear. I had a bit of a tear, but it was more... Why did I cry? I think I cried because I was picturing my mum at the time.
Oh, God.
And like her being a widow.
Yeah.
And all of those... Okay, what was most profound to me...
It's the empathy of it.
...was when everyone in Bridget's life was saying, you should focus on yourself. No, you should focus on the kids. No, you should do this, this and that. And I think it's all this outside commentary from people that they feel the need to say something and tell you how to live your life when you're grieving. And I think she just dealt with it so well. She normally just got a bottle of wine.
Shut up.
But I think that really resonated with me and like knowing that everyone always has so many opinions and they don't know what to do. And the truth is there is no rule book and no one knows what they're going to do, and you're just trying your fucking best because you 100%. Haven't done this or been through this before. And you can still smile and be happy even though you're grieving.
Amen.
And I think that was a really beautiful message.
Yeah, that is a really beautiful message. Crazy stuff, man.
Crazy stuff. Do you want to talk about the fact that it was your mum's birthday?
Yeah, it was mummy's birthday. Was it yesterday?
Two days ago.
Yeah, no, it was Saturday. Yeah, it was funny. Do you know what? I think because me and my family it's not that we don't acknowledge it, but I don't think it's like, we normally celebrate the anniversary a little bit more than like her birthday, but I kind of like, you know when you like forget in the first half of the the first half of the day, and then you kind of like clock the date and you're like, oh shit. So then like, because I'd forgotten in the morning, I was like, oh shit, you forgot. And then I was like, oh, you forgot. And then I cried and I was like, you forgot. That's so shitty of you. And then it's never fun. But my godmother sent me a really lovely picture of mum, and that was really nice. And I spoke to my sister a little bit and she was having a hard day too. And I think it was nice just for us to kind of connect. But
can you share about, you know, how you're feeling with your sister? Or is it more of like a person?
Oh, my God. I honestly, like, with Tabby, like, I don't know if she listens to this at all. But, like, she is, like, because she's the one I get upset about the most. Like, she's the most brilliant, strong, independent, determined, opinionated, you know, like, unique person. She's so brave and... she doesn't think she is, which really annoys me sometimes. And like, I know that she doesn't like talking about her sadness, and I wish that she did because I'd love to be there for her. But also, like, it's, everyone grieves differently. Like, I mean for God's sake, I have a radio show. We have a radio show about me, us talking about my dead mum. But like, for Tabs, it's just not the same thing. And I mean, she's also not in London. Like, she's with my dad and Ken and stuff, and it's tricky to like be away from. I think when you're with your siblings as well, I know that, because you're an older sibling as well, it's like, I don't know how you feel, but like, there's just a protectiveness that comes from it. And like, when I hear that she's sad or whatever, it's it's like, that's the part that's painful. Like, yeah, I'm sad about mum, of course I'm sad about mum, but like, seeing my little sister, like, I honestly, like, I don't know if it's like a, I don't know if everyone feels this about their younger siblings, but like, I think about like killing for Tabby all the time. And Maddie, my other sister. Like, I think about killing people.
to save them for Tabby.
I'm like, if anyone fucking comes, I'm like, I will. I mean, like, this is gonna, if I ever murder someone now, I'm completely...
You are complicit.
I'm fucked.
I'm complicit.
You're gonna be all accessories to murder.
We're all
God
in it.
Damn it. That took a turn.
I know what you mean, though. I know what you mean. I think sibling relationships are very complex.
They are. They're so different.
My brother hasn't replied to me in God knows how long, so...
My sister, my bless her, like, I call her and she's just different to me. Like, she has a like a 9 to 5, so I'll call her at like 12 and she's like, I'm at work, still am, every day. And I'm like, oh yeah, because I do shifts and stuff, so my schedule is never ever the same. And then I call her at 9 o'clock at night and she's like, Tash, I'm asleep, I have to be up at 5. And I'm like, oh, sorry. So we're just not on the same schedule.
That's okay.
But yeah,
you're a supportive sister, and that's the main thing.
And also, like,
she's
at the end of the
day, lucky to have you.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, like, things change, like, with siblings. Like, we never got on, and then, you know, I think time and space and both of us growing up.
And definitely space. I think sometimes you need that to be able to
come back together again.
Yeah, and we always have something. We always have everything in common because, you know, because I'm mama.
I'm really excited to go to the break because I really want to come back and speak to Stuart
about Sandamon
about breathwork. So we're going to take a break. But please stay and listen. We'll see you very soon.
Come and breathe with us.
Come and breathe with us, yes.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome back to Death of Funny Business. We are joined with Stuart Sandamon in the studio today. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure.
Breathwork, God, basically. that's the only intro
Becky
I'm going to give.
Very excited. Becky is a
so excited.
Breathwork fiend.
I am. But well, let's intro you properly. You are globally recognised as a breathing expert, performance coach, and founder of BreathPod, which helps people to better themselves through breathing. Mm. Also, an author, best-selling author, and a Radio 1 DJ. Well, we all know we're all here because we were having to deal with grief. And you lost your partner, Tiff, when she was 32?
Yes.
To cancer?
No, she was 31.
31, yeah. To cancer. So,
She was diagnosed when she was 30 and passed away when she was 31.
I'm sorry. We never know what to say, do we, when we say this? Because we're like, it's just shit.
We've decided that there is nothing to say.
We've decided last week there's nothing to say.
There is nothing to say.
But do you want to tell us a little bit about Tiff? We always think it's really important to remember people.
What was she like?
Oh, she was amazing. Yeah. And the funny thing is, I still feel very connected to her in a spiritual way. And that's, for me, the thing with grief is... been positive as it opened me up to a world I didn't open myself to before it happening. But her as a person, really vibrant, life loving. We had a lot of fun together, we traveled a lot together, and she was from New York. I'm from Scotland, so there was a bit of cultural differences as well. Which is it was amazing. It was a beautiful time. Looking back, it's always sad on how it ended, but I think, like you said, celebrating the person that was there and the energy that she brought and the connection that we had was such a beautiful thing. And in many ways, part of that journey was going through cancer. And I think that can make or break you. And sadly, she didn't make it in terms of being here anymore.
Yeah.
But it's bizarre when people ask me about it. I'm always back and I think it was quite... a beautiful thing to go through, and that sounds really weird when you're talking about grief, which is shit, as you said. But it evoked a lot of feeling and a lot of emotion and a lot of learning and a lot of growth and a lot of sadness, but kind of reaching into the depths of yourself and understanding yourself better through grief, I think, is something we all will do at some point.
And I don't want to tell your story for you, but what I've read is that it was your mum's birthday and you didn't know what to get her. So you got her a breathing exercise class whilst you were in the midst of the grieving shit.
Process.
Is that true? Is that how you found breathwork? Or can you explain the true story? Because also explain kind of what breathwork is, because I think, it's actually not many people do know about it still.
Yeah, no, and I was one of those people. Tiff passed away on Valentine's Day.
Oh,
which is,
God.
I was like, really? For fuck's sake. she passed on Valentine's Day, which... had its own complications moving forward from grief, and Anna were in a beautiful relationship, engaged, but Valentine's Day is always a funny one. But fortunately, now it's a day of celebration.
Absolutely.
And Nova, my partner, now we celebrate that day because we wouldn't be here without what happened before. So it's quite a positive thing. So she passed on Valentine's Day, and it was a really weird time for me, and I moved back home to Scotland. We'd been traveling a lot, kind of searching for a cure for cancer. Spent a lot of savings and more, and raised lots of money through GoFundMe. She actually passed away in Taiwan. So I'd been living out in Taiwan, of all places, with her. She was Taiwanese, so although she was from New York, her heritage was there. So we ended up finding doctors there. Anyway, long story, but back to my mum. It was Mother's Day. So... Mother's Day it was like a month afterwards, maybe even a bit more. It just depends when it lands. I think it was that year. It was about 6 weeks after Valentine's Day. And my mum got a great relationship with her. She'd been amazingly supportive, and I didn't have anything for her for Mother's Day, and something just popped up online saying breathing workshop, and I just thought, oh, wow, my mum will love that. She's into yoga. Tick. And went along with her. I went the following week. It was the following weekend, and had a really profound experience. But ultimately why I'm here doing what I do now. I did a breathing practice. I thought it would just be very chilled yogic and it's relaxing. I thought I probably needed that. But it was a different style of breathing, unknowingly to myself, who could even go there with just breathing. Where we did a certain technique, which is there to evoke feeling and to release what's held in our body and subconscious. And I had a very big release, very cathartic release. I hadn't actually cried much through my grieving process. And I think that was part of my bigger process, which is big boys don't cry, and holding it all in and not wanting to speak to anyone about it. But there I was breathing with my mum for a Mother's Day present. And I had this bizarre experience of, in all essence, leaving my body and being fully connected to her and Tiff holding my hand and saying, this is exactly what we were looking for. This is the answers, because we were searching for this magic thing. And it felt a very powerful experience. And I only had three options. Either someone spiked my drink before going in. That was one option. I'm going completely mad. Or the third option was something I'd overlooked my whole life. This thing called breathing that we're doing all day, every day, had the power to transcend my everyday operating, everyday being, and connect me to somewhere else. So that was my first experience, and it was very sad. And it was weird because I was sad but excited. I was like, what the fuck just happened?
That was terrifying, but also
beautiful. And in many ways I thought, well, maybe I can just do this and feel connected to her. And that became my thing for a while. I was like, right, well, hey, what just happened? Is this my imagination? They definitely didn't spike my drinks. So that was out. They weren't the type to do that. That's what kind of got me really excited about breathing. It was through grief, through this deeper connection to Tiff again. And the more I practiced and the more I worked, I actually started working very closely with one of the teachers there, and the more I felt like I was just, you kind of pick up the rock and there's more underneath, and then there's more and more and more. And the more I practiced, the more I kind of moved through the challenging aspects of grief, the depression and the sadness, and the not really wanting to speak to anyone or do anything. And this gave me a space to feel without any boundaries, without having to talk, which felt good for someone that didn't really want to talk about it. And that was me. That was me off into this journey, that a world that I never knew existed, the world of breathing. And this was 9 years ago now. Wow. So breathwork really wasn't a thing back then. It was just kind of starting up as a tool.
And for people who don't really, I'm just trying to paint a picture so people can visualise what happened during that experience. I've done one breathwork class and I had a very similar experience to you, where I was lying on the mat and I could see my dad and I could see my family, and then I was shaking. I was so cold and I had to put loads of blankets on me. I felt really sick. I thought I was going to throw up at one point. And then it was exactly like you said, a cathartic release. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, what has happened? But it just felt like that's something that I needed to do. And since then, I've been telling everyone about it. But how did it look like when you were doing it? Was it an hour session? Just kind of give some context as to kind of what that looked like.
Yeah, well, I think just to kind of backtrack from that, breathwork as a practice is quite a big umbrella. And the word gets thrown around, but you can do breathwork as a form of meditation.
Yeah.
And there's different styles of breathwork within that umbrella of breathwork. There is doing something like controlling your nervous system, using very functional breathwork, using maybe a pattern of in and out to regulate your nervous system. So something like 4-7-8 breath for sleep to calm the nervous system and help you drift off, or using your breath to energize, or using your breath to find more focus. Or I put that bracket of breath work into sort of your functional breath work. And I find it a very useful tool to use when you're feeling a certain way and you want to feel something different. You can do, change your breath, change your rhythm. You change your breath, you change the way you feel, you change the way you think, and you can move forward feeling a bit different, which is amazing. Where I start off with breath work, which sounds similar to yourself, is using a more dynamic form of breathing, which is less about control. That first route of functional is about controlling your breath to feel under control. The other group is about letting go of control. Letting go of control of the patterns, the habits, the rigidity of our minds, of our old thought patterns, and creating space and letting go of the past and integrating any traumas or grief can be part of that whole process. And that is a more dynamic practice. It's like a super ventilation practice. So you're breathing a bit quicker than you usually would. You're deliberately stimulating the body, overstimulating the body, which tricks the body, shifts the brain waves in the mind. So our brain moves into more gamma waves. And it shifts the chemistry of our body as well. So we have this huge shift that happens pretty quickly. Most of those sessions, including the one I first did when I found myself there with my mum, the actual breathing part's about an hour. But either side, you'll have some conversations, set intentions, and maybe share at the end. And I think that's part of that process. But generally speaking, it is about an hour, about 45 minutes of breath work, and then about 15 minutes of relaxation. And it's a more dynamic form of breath work, where you're breathing a bit quicker, you're letting go of control of the breath in a fluid dance of breath, if you like. I'm not really going into full depth because it's one of these things that you're best to do it with somebody and be with a trained facilitator. I mean, there's loads of places popping up to work with a trained facilitator on those practices, because you can start to release things that you've maybe buried. And it can be a very powerful tool to let go of trauma. Of anything from your past that you've not allowed yourself to fully feel.
Right. Because I think I was imagining like a much more kind of like yoga, like you're saying, like kind of chill yogic breathing situation. But it sounds like this is a lot more kind of vulnerable than maybe some other breathing practices. So you'd recommend kind of sticking with someone or with like professional practitioners 100%. In like a class or something like that.
Yeah. Either a one-to-one setting if you want that, or going into a class and do your homework beforehand. Because breathwork has become on trend in many ways, we say that, but it's birthed a lot of these learn to be a breathworker in a weekend, and there's so many courses out there that that people can go and learn one style of breathwork, but then not know how to hold space when someone's in deep grief. Right. I'm not having the skill set to manage and support somebody who is maybe going through trauma or going through childhood trauma that they haven't dealt with before. So it's a really, really delicate and vulnerable space. But big part of it is feeling safe enough to go there with that practitioner or with that group. So yes, if you feel like you need some extra help and support, absolutely go and explore it, but just do a bit of homework like anything. Like if you're going to see a therapist or anyone like that, you probably want to check them out beforehand and see that they're fully trained.
I have downloaded your BreathPod app.
Okay,
the last 3 mornings I've been doing the breath work, like morning manifestation, and then there was a focus one, and it's done exactly that. It's changed I was in a bad kind of mental state, and then I just felt so different. And today I felt so calm.
There we go.
I just want to talk about it all the time because I just think it's really helped. But like, how often do you think we should be incorporating breath work in our routine? And is 10 minutes a day enough, or do we need to be doing these kind of like hour long sessions? Like, how do we practice breath work in I don't know, the most positive way?
A daily practice for me is a must, 100%, but there's different forms of breath work, so it kind of comes back to that: what are you practicing and what's your intention? And that comes with awareness. So how are you feeling? How do you want to feel? And that's why in the app there's different categories for different things: waking up, winding down, feeling calm, feeling focused, or some deeper transcendent practices if we're wanting to deepen our connection maybe to parts of ourselves that we've closed off from, or maybe something greater than ourselves, this more spiritual space. So it really comes down to personal preference. I guess there's starting off, it's making sure you're breathing correctly and making sure that's not affecting your breathing practice in any way, and then playing around with whatever practices you may wish to do. But having that 10 minutes in the morning for me is like, it's exactly what you said, yeah, absolute game changer. And I sometimes fluctuate what that is. Maybe it's a morning manifestation, or maybe it is something more focus based. You might look at your week, you might be just feeling based. Some days you wake up feeling a bit anxious, you think, you know, I need to just ground myself before I step out into the world. And that creates a real nice foundation, just setting the space and time for the daily practice. A lot of the things I do with BreathPod and on the BreathPod app is creating like programs of time. So right now on the app, we're doing February Focus. And yes, the whole theme is looking at February as this month to really focus on what matters. And that might be a range of different things for people. In January, we did January Manifestation. That sort of collective time for change and really aligning our energy with that. And then when we move into March, we're doing Spring Clean, which is all like about we're going to do a cleanse. And we're also, so the morning practice, we've been gearing up towards what those specific themes are, but then individually we go through different fluxes, different seasons of our life, and different moments where we might need something different or different challenges, and you might want to lean on some of these other practices. I mean, we're talking about grief here as well. There's stuff there for grief. So if you're going through that grieving process, like coming back to yourself, in Chinese medicine, grief is held in the lungs. They say that that's where we hold our grief, and we do. We hold on. We feel it in our chest. So it can, for me, again, breath work has been, and I see it, not just my own experience, the thousands of people I worked with through grief and other challenges, is that release comes very fluidly when we come into this practice, or when we come into a certain practice of breath. And it kind of falls back into this Chinese medicine tradition of where grief is held.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And I read that you've also performed like breathwork sessions ahead of like the men's Euro final, and like to help them like when they're about to score a penalty. Can you tell us a little bit about that and like how breathwork works in like these high pressure environments as well? Because obviously I think what we've discussed has been like at home, maybe more of like a personal therapy, but how does it work when you're on the football pitch?
I can't talk exactly what we do with what I've done with the England team, but in general, high pressure moments, there's ways we can. It depends on what we're trying to do. I work with a lot of athletes and work with a lot of high performing individuals, and then whether it's team based or whether it is individual based, we've talked about kind of functional breathing, and then we've talked about the sort of deeper release breathing for change. We can actually fine tune our breath to harness our energy levels from a focus perspective, but also from a sporting perspective. When we're looking at things like VO2 max or athletic performance, why do people not perform at their best in the gym, or why do we stop? We're either breathless, we've ran out of breath, or we've got our muscles are sore, which is lactic acid, which is also to do with breath.
I always hold my breath when I'm running.
Oh,
we need to change that.
Yeah, I just forget that I'm doing it. I'm like,
you have to breathe.
Yeah, so we get 2/3 of our energy from our breath. So we want to be using, you want to be using your breath as much as you can. So working on a program with people to fine tune their breathing so that they get more output from one breath. Ultimately, when we're looking kind of energy in, energy out, making sure that our respiratory system is optimized at its best. So that's one side for performance. And then other side is those high pressure moments. How do we calm ourselves when we've got a really important thing to do? And how do we keep focused? How do we tune out the noise or distractions around us, whether that is a rugby kick or a football pitch or whatever it is that we're doing, or even just a task at work or a business pitch or anything like that.
And is there like one tip or like one top tip that you'd give people who are like super new beginners, or you know, someone who hasn't even kind of approached breath work but is like, oh, this sounds quite interesting, that they can do that's small in their daily life that maybe would make it feel like it make a difference maybe?
You say small, but sometimes the small simple things are the best. Probably the most important thing would be, if in doubt, breathe it out.
Breathe it out?
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay. And what I mean by that is when we have a nice long drawn out breath, we signal our heart to slow down, our blood pressure drops, and we move into our parasympathetic, our rest, digest mode. So if we're feeling stressed, if you're feeling anxious, if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling distracted, breathe in for something like a four count. There we go. Hold for four. And then breathe out through your mouth for eight. That was a bit quicker. So you'll start to feel a bit of a calm response kick in. So you can do it even slower on that out breath. So in for four, hold for four, out for eight. And drop your shoulders. There we go. So a really simple technique, but it's something that I've used so often if I'm feeling a bit nervous or I'm feeling a little bit anxious or just need to take the edge off. And there's lots of techniques you can learn like that for different moments, whether it is feeling a bit more focused or maybe it's energizing if we're feeling like we need a bit of a boost in the morning.
Do you feel relaxed now?
Yeah.
I've started practicing that because it helps so much. And I can't believe it's so overlooked.
No, but
I've been reading like James Nestor's book and stuff, and there's so much more I want to ask you, but we don't have time. Yeah.
But genuinely, I think like it's so real that we do keep a lot like in the, when you're stressed, you keep a lot, everything is in the top of your chest. And if you're nervous, it's all coming from here. And, you know, I think that, you know, maybe we can all start incorporating our breath work. Hey.
You are.
I'd take away the maybe and just say, yeah, all,
let's
all
do it. Yeah,
I'll do it.
Download BreathPod, honestly.
Yeah, amen. I will.
Thank you so much, Stuart, for being in the studio with us. Really appreciate you sharing everything. And we're going to go to one of, I think I'm going to make you go to one of his classes. Have you got a class?
Yeah, we've 15th got
15th of March or something.
15th of March.
Oh my God, you're a creep.
Number one fan.
Okay, so normal. We're going. Are you telling me we're going on
the
15th?
We want to go.
All right. I've been told. I'm excited.
See you there.
Thank you.
See you there. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll see everyone after the break.
Bye.
Death, a funny business on Foo Bar Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer Levy.
And we're back. Welcome to Death, a Funny Business. We are now joined with Georgina Stummer, who is a counsellor who helps women and specifically dealing with grief. And she also has a blog where she explores different topics relating to grief. So perfect guest to have, really.
Yeah,
so
much.
Welcome, Georgina. Hi.
Hello.
Hey. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. So do you want to sort of like, where do we start, Tash?
Well, I mean, we're women with grief.
Yeah. Why specifically women? Like, do you speak to like mainly women about grief?
So in my practice, I specialise in working with women because that's my background. I've worked in a women's centre and for charities where we work with women. But I also think that there are differences in the ways that we tend to cope with grief. It's not black and white. It's not that men cope in one way and women cope in another way. But I think that there are certainly kind of stereotypes and judgments around how women should and shouldn't handle grief and the way that we tend to seek support for it as well.
So what are the kind of differences, like why do women require like different support to men? Like, can you go through some examples, like how do we show grief differently?
Well, I think it's something, I guess there's kind of the broader picture of how men and women typically in our society think and talk about their feelings. So we often have different types of support networks, and we often approach different types of organisations for support. I think that we often have this sense that women are freer to show their emotions, perhaps. But then the flip side of it is that we also often see women as the people that are holding everyone together. You know, so especially if we are parents or we are siblings or we are children of people who are also bereaved, then there's this kind of tension of, well, on the one hand, we're meant to be really good at handling our feelings because we're girls. But on the other hand, we're looking after everybody else at the same time.
Absolutely. I mean, that just reminds me of all the kind of conversation that we have about like hidden labor when it comes to being a woman and how, you know, we are there to kind of a lot of the time to handle other people.
I have to wear all the hats.
We have to wear all the hats.
Show emotion, but don't be too emotional.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, I think traditionally, as a society, we see grief as a really difficult thing, and often we're a bit scared to talk about it. What I really love about talking about grief in the therapy room is that often for many people, it's the only place that they can really talk about it, and they can talk about things beyond feeling a bit sad. So, you know, if in everyday life it's okay to talk about feeling a bit sad, we might also be feeling frustrated, resentful, angry, relieved, all these other feelings that might come in from when we've experienced some kind of loss. And so actually being in the therapy room and giving someone the space to look at all those things, it can be, it's really a privilege.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Really to be able to do it with someone.
That's so lovely. And I was just thinking kind of like, in regards to, because so Becky and I have both lost people, and we this is why we have the show. But I think one of the questions that we've asked a lot between ourselves is, after all this time, and there has been quite a lot of time, well, I mean, there's different amounts of time, but after a long period of time when it comes to grief, I think the biggest question we always have is that, like, after a long period of time, how do we kind of move on? Like, what would your advice be to someone who's had bereavement in the past and is now still dealing with it in the present? But does that make any sense? I still haven't asked a question, but
I'm happy to go for it.
Yeah, because I think I'm getting a sense of what you're asking, yeah. And it sounds like what you're asking is there a time frame after which we should be feeling different, or we should be feeling better, we should be moving on in our lives? And I guess there's kind of good news and bad news there, which is I really don't believe that there is a time frame. So that might sound like bad news if grief is a really tough place to be in your life. But it also means that, like all of our life experiences, all of our losses, because when we think about grief, we're not necessarily just talking about bereavement. We're talking about loss of identity, loss of relationships, all kinds of different things. Actually, they stay with us for our entire lives, and maybe that's okay. And sometimes that's the biggest part of what we talk about in therapy with grief, is that actually maybe we can still be grieving years, decades later after a loss, but maybe we can learn how to grow around it rather than being consumed by it and being triggered every time we see something and being taken back to a really difficult place. Mm. Mm.
And how does that relate? You know, what are your thoughts on the five stages of, is it the five stages of grief?
Five? Eight?
How many stages are there?
10?
Because I don't know, I think I've done them all, but then I realise I haven't done them all. But this rule book that we're supposed to have, like, ticked this box and then done that, and then we've kind of like...
We're done now.
We're done.
Yeah.
So there are loads of different models of grief, and the model that you're referring to is the model that was popularised by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and she actually originally wrote about it. The five stages, when she was actually thinking about patients with terminal illness who are coming to terms with their own loss. But in fact, it's then been moved on and looked at as a model for grief. So when we talk about five stages, and I hear people, you know, and people will come into my therapy room and they will say, oh, you know, I think I'm at this stage, what happens next? But the truth is that it is not linear. So while the labels for the stages might be helpful for some people to think about what's happening for them right now, you know, am I denying things? Am I accepting things? Actually, grief is much more messy and up and down and backwards and forwards. And I find that sometimes the idea that we progress through different stages of grief can be quite unhelpful, because it might feel like we're kind of failing, or it might feel like we've got a really tough part to come, or we might feel like we should be at the easy bit now, when actually we can go backwards and forwards and in and around all the different stages all the time.
Mm. I think that's really helpful to know, because I mean, I feel like I've definitely gone back to zero again.
Yeah, we often talk about and, it being non-linear, don't we?
We talk about it all the time. I think it's important for people to know that there isn't like a right or wrong.
Yeah,
I think it's also nice hearing it from like an expert's point of view rather than just us chatting all the time.
This is a real professional, guys. Take note.
If you're ever going to listen now. And so what role does attachment theory play in grief? Like, do people who form secure attachments generally cope with loss in a different way than those with more insecure attachments? Because I did one of these attachment quizzes the other day. And
how did that go?
Secure attachment, apparently.
Really?
Shocking.
Well, I can't relate.
I don't think I answered that, honestly.
The anxious attachment over here is fearful.
I think that attachment plays an enormous role in the way that we cope with grief. So attachment begins from the moment we're born. From the moment we're born, we start looking to the people in our lives, to our early caregivers, to figure out kind of who we are and what our models are of the world around us. So we're deciding, are we likable? Are we lovable? Are we approved of? But we're also figuring out how we cope with loss. So they do experiments on young babies where they will bring a mother and a baby into a room and the mother will leave and return, and they look at how that baby responds. And that is the beginning of how we learn about attachment and loss and how we respond to losses. And so as we go through life, we will absolutely see that these patterns that kind of begin at the beginning of our lives will continue. And so this is why when we're grieving, you know, some of us become really preoccupied with our grief. We can't move on for it. We can't cope with the idea that we should be feeling better at any point. And by contrast, we might find some people who are much more dismissive about their grief, who are much more kind of on the surface, looking very independent, very self-reliant, and kind of moving on from things. And a lot of that is because of the attachments that we've built when we're growing up.
I lost my mum really early, and I feel like it's definitely formed my attachment styles now. I wonder if you have any advice for people who have kind of had that, maybe it's not necessarily negative, but like had that more difficult kind of evolution of their own attachment style, and how can we, you know, shift to maybe more secure, like, is there a way to shift into a more secure place of attachment style, like in your daily life, if you've dealt with grief early on?
I think the amazing thing about attachment is that it's not set in stone.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I've just talked through, this idea that we form these patterns when we're growing up, is absolutely at the heart of attachment research. But what we also know is that all the neuroscience research shows us that we have the ability to change these models within our brains. So to change the neural pathways, which teach us about how we respond to other people. And so from a kind of psychotherapy perspective, what we talk about is people building earned security. So if we think about a secure attachment that we might develop because of the relationship that we have with our early caregivers or our parents, actually later on in life, we can build a sense of earned security. So we can build that in a relationship with another person. We can build that in therapy. And it gives us that opportunity to feel safe and to have a place where we can try things out and to experience, you know, rejection and acceptance and all these other things in a healthy way. But we can absolutely change those patterns and those models as we get older.
Is it important to recognise that then? So, for example, when my dad died, my immediate thought was, I need to make babies and have a family. Like, honestly, I remember it so well. Like he died like 2 nights before and I was lying in bed. Babe. I was like, Mum, I think I need to marry my boyfriend that I'm with, and I just need to make babies, because I think I just wanted to recreate this family that had just gone, that had just disappeared. But is it important that I acknowledge, or not just me, but anyone in the situation, that you acknowledge that someone's gone, and what an impact that's had in terms of like a relationship moving forward with men, or like if it's your case, like your mum, and like relationships with women, like how do we actually take that and know what to do? Because I think, imagine if I had babies, like that probably wouldn't have been the best
people,
thing to do.
I guess people do though, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
You just didn't.
I just didn't.
I think it can be really hard, you know, and that is why sometimes, you know, when someone is grieving, you know, people will say, you know, don't make big decisions right now, you know, don't necessarily take those massive steps, because even if we feel like we're okay, something huge and traumatic has just happened to us. And so I think you're right. I think it's just having this awareness that actually we are different now. We have changed as people. We have been through a loss. And our brain is trying to understand what has happened. You know, there's this incredible book called The Grieving Brain, where she talks about what happens to our brains when we're grieving. And part of the disconnect is that actually it can be really hard for our brains to acknowledge the loss that we've been through. And so we kind of struggle and we get a bit stuck. We might make bad decisions or decisions that aren't right for us at the time, when actually what we need to do is somehow kind of integrate this new knowledge. I have lost someone. I am different now. And then that can help us to make healthier decisions, I think.
And is it bad? Is it, you know, people talk about like mummy issues and daddy issues. is that bad?
I mean, if it's bad, we're fucked. Sorry.
No, but is it, I mean, it's obviously normal for me to look for, I don't know, someone who's going to, I really don't want to face just this say badly. It. I'm not actually looking for, but like I can't say it out loud.
A father figure
in a relationship, but I'm obviously not, but I may be more attracted to someone who's a bit more like that.
Yeah. Aren't we all?
Is that wrong?
No.
I think it's just about being honest with yourself, and it's about noticing these patterns. I think what's difficult is when we get stuck in patterns and we don't notice them, we don't see what's happening, and something is going wrong. You know, something is not playing out well for us. Our relationships are ending badly, or we're feeling unsatisfied, and we're not noticing what's happening. But actually, if we have that awareness and we can see what it is that we're doing, then it means we can catch ourselves and we can understand. You know, something I will often say in the therapy room is, does this feel familiar? Does it feel like a pattern that is often happening? And I wonder why it is that it keeps repeating in this way.
And that really resonates with me. And I think that, would you agree that there's a level of sometimes patterns can be bad and then sometimes it's okay? Like, I think that there are some patterns that perhaps are not as negative. I mean, it's like the daddy issues or whatever. Mm. Like, is that necessarily, as long as they're not harming you, are they?
Well, that was my question.
Is that okay?
when we're talking about relationship patterns, you know, we all often naturally have certain things that we're drawn to, and I guess the question is, does that relationship feel healthy? Does it feel balanced? Both people in that relationship are getting their needs met. You know, does it feel like there's good communication, or does it feel like actually things are a bit unhealthy, but I'm so busy trying to replicate something that I desperately need in my life that I'm overlooking all the red flags?
Okay. I feel like I understand that more. I feel like I was like, ah, because you can be like, you're allowed to want someone who's paternal.
Yeah.
That's not the word.
No.
You know what I mean?
Shit.
Anyway. It's getting a bit Freudian over here.
It is. Thank you so much, Georgina, for joining us. I really appreciate your time. And hopefully, if anyone listening that needs to have a space to talk about death and grief, then...
Find Georgina.
Pardon?
Huh?
What did you say?
Go see her.
Yeah, exactly. Go and see Georgina. Can they do that? Can they find you? Is that allowed?
Yeah, they can find me. My website.
Yeah. Amazing. Georgina Sturmer. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Georgina.
Bye.
Bye.
I feel really embarrassed now.
Why?
I talked about daddy issues.
No, but this is a thing. This is why I wanted to clarify with her. Like, I think that the point is that it's fine as long as it's not negative. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you had an abusive father and subsequently you went for men who...
Abuse you,
who, like, you know, if you have something like that, then that's a negative thing. But if you're looking for someone who cares for you, who's you know, sympathetic and maybe like looking after you, it's like a, you know, that I don't think is a bad thing. And I think that's I mean, in my therapy, I've, you know,
but I always wonder if people have that even if their parent hasn't died.
Absolutely. I think they do.
That is a thing,
because you can have
it?
An abusive parent and they can still be alive. And
yeah, no, but I mean more like if you have like two parents who both adore you and have like a nice upbringing and everything, and you're looking for someone, surely there are attributes of both of your parents
you marry your dad, you marry your mum, don't you? It's like that. Do you know that? Like, people always say, like, you always end up with someone that's kind of like one of your parents, which is gross, but also
so
like
gross.
I think it, but it is. So this is exactly what we're talking about: learned behaviors and patterns. And
I think we need next week. Let's have a proper like daddy issues. Are you not here next week?
Oh yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to speak to someone else about my daddy issues then. But anyway, thank you so much for Stuart Sanderman and Georgina Sturmer for joining us today. So interesting. Yeah. We're going to do the breathwork class and get back to.
Yeah.
You on that one.
Yep.
And the show will be Tuesday next week at 5 p.m.
It will be.
So thank you so much for today, Tash.
Have the best day.
Have the best day.
Have the best day. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.